This week's court decisions coincided with a paper published in the latest edition of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It's not typically the kind of publication known for court watching, but the current issue presents a mathematical analysis of voting patterns on the Rehnquist Court. And one of the paper's conclusions is that the 9-member court is made up of only 4.68 ideal justices. Does the Senate Judiciary Committee know this? Our math guy, Stanford University mathematician Keith Devlin, joins us. Keith, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Scott. Good to be here, as usual.
And what do they mean, ideal justice?
The author of this paper, who's a mathematician called Lawrence Sirovich at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine, he took as a definition of an ideal justice, a justice who is, their votes will be on their own opinion and could be totally independent of all the other 8 justices on the bench.
Kate, now as I understand it, 468 decisions going back 9 years since Justice Breyer joined the court, there were only 2 vectors determined.
Right, and this is the part of his analysis.
I'm trying to sound as if I know what a vector is in this context.
Okay, here's what Sirovich did. He said, let's take all of these 468 rulings by 9 justices and arrange them as a rectangular array, a big table. And in that table, you have 9 rows, which represents the 9 justices. You have 468 columns, which represents the individual rulings that were made. And on each entry of this table, this 9 by 468 table, put down a 1 if that particular justice agreed with the majority on that decision, and put down a -1 if that justice disagreed with the majority. And Sirovich says, this is like a pixelated image. This is just how we represent a black and white image on a computer screen. I can take all of this clever mathematics we've got for analysing images and applying it to this sort of judgment image of the court. And when he did that, he found out that instead of having 9 individual degrees of freedom in making their decisions, as one might expect if one didn't know how the court operated, in fact, there are only 2 degrees of freedom. There are, underneath all the court's decisions, there are 2 currents which govern the entire ebb and flow of their thinking. Their tendency to have unanimous decisions, and the other one, the strong tendency to have a split 5-4 decision. Everything is a combination of those 2 rulings, and Professor Sirovich is very careful to point out that one should just read these results as data, but then the interpretation of those data have to be made on sound legal and political judgments, of course.
Keith, is this a lot of intellectual firepower to prove something that in the end is unprovable, or at least so what?
If you begin with the assumption that indeed these are justices who do listen to each other, who are influenced by each other, and given their basic human left-right preclusions are more likely to be influenced by people with the same leaning as themselves, then the findings actually agree with what one might assume, that in fact most of the time they would tend to have unanimous decisions because most of the cases that they choose to consider will tend to be that way. And then when they disagree, they will tend to disagree with a 5-4 split. And the mathematics simply confirms that in a mathematically interesting fashion.
I happen to speak with a justice at the Supreme Court who says her idea of an ideal mathematician is someone who doesn't butt into their business. I'm just wondering what you say to that.
Well, I'd be delighted if I'd go through the rest of my life without having any lawyers butt into my business. How does that sound?
Keith Devlin, Executive Director of the Center for the Study of Language and Information at Stanford University, but deep in his heart and dreams, our math guy here in Weekend Edition. Keith, thanks very much. Nice talking to you.
Okay, thanks, Scott. Bye-bye.